You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
Hi, I'm Joe Heath.
I'm Tony Heath.
And this is the Watchathon of Rassilon.
That you are listening to with your ears. Congrats!
You win. Today we're going to be talking about the second serial of the 20th season of Doctor Who, Snake Dance, which consists of four episodes that aired from January 18th, 1983 to January 26th, 1983. And it's a sort of sequel, well, it's a straight up sequel to Kinda.
True facts!
And I want to give a special shout out to Matt Golden for sponsoring this episode.
Hey, thanks, Matt.
Golden!
You can check him out at matthewgolden.net. We got guests today. Vince and EL is back.
Hi, I'm a person.
How you doing, Vince?
Melting, but otherwise I'm okay.
And we also have another returning guest, Adam Clegg. Welcome back.
Hello, thanks. Great to be back. Looking forward to talking about this one.
And this is the first time you guys have been on the same podcast together, correct?
That seems plausible.
That's correct, yeah.
All right, let's see how well your dynamic
Let's see
goes.
Which one of them will win.
I don't dynam.
There will be a death match before the podcast is over.
Okay, I'll lose.
well, it's a rap battle, so you might not.
Yeah, I'm pretty bad at freestyle, though.
Drop some hot verses.
I didn't say it had to be a freestyle rap battle. You can use
We will give you 10 to 30 minutes.
It doesn't even have to be, like, disparaging towards your opponent. It just has to be good.
Oh, well, then I'll win.
if good's what you're looking for.
This is starting to feel very weighted, actually.
Yeah.
I feel like this is rigged in my favor.
Well, I've known you longer, so I wanted to give you a little bit of an advantage. It's definitely like, it's not nepotism. What's the word when it's not family?
I think it's found nepotism.
Yeah, it's found nepotism.
So how you guys been holding up during this, you know?
How's life?
Yeah, 2020 pandemic
bullshit.
Craziness.
Well, I've been self-quarantining because my country, Sweden, is doing pretty much nothing. So I'm trying to take care of myself. I've been using up my guaranteed vacation that we have in our country.
Sounds nice. Sounds nice.
So that's something. But I'm running out of days and I'm about to have to go back to work and I'm probably going to get sick.
Wear a mask. And Adam, how are you holding up?
Okay. I mean, yeah, in one of the countries with one of the highest death rates and worst responses to the virus. So that's lots of fun. But I'm working from home. We're going out, but not much. I mean, we're taking a lot of precautions. I now just whisper through people's letterboxes, do you want to hear my opinions about Doctor Who? Because, you know, I'm not getting a chance to share them very often at the moment.
Get you a Twitter. That's what it's for.
I'm glad we are giving you a better outlet than whispering through a letterbox. So, hopefully, anyway.
Next up, we're looking forward to my Power of the Daleks critique, but that'll just have to wait, I guess.
Speaking of talking about Doctor Who, let's talk about Doctor Who.
All right.
Let's talk about...
Good segue, Joe. Nice.
Yeah,
nice.
I'm great. I'm a wonderful podcaster. Let's talk about Snake Dance.
Well, you're really putting that new pop filter to work, huh?
Oh, am I? Yeah. Didn't even think about that. All right, so let's dive right into episode one, which I have called Snake Dream. That all of these titles are going to have a theme.
Oh, boy.
Snake D something. So first one is Snake Dream. So we start with a guy in the desert with a cool necklace, and we don't learn who he is for a very long time.
That's what your notes sure do say.
We've already hit the point where I've forgotten what happened in the episode. I mean, I've forgotten most of it. I'm mostly here to either not say anything or derail the podcast. So that's my job here because I have terrible memory and also social skills.
I know we brought you on for a reason.
Can we just acknowledge the Doctor Who predicted Burning Man?
I like this look of this dude a lot. We'll later learn his name is Dojin.
Wait, is this is the old guy who comes back later, right?
Yeah. First three episodes,
you,
he just sits in the desert with his eyes closed, taking a nap, and he's wearing a blue necklace.
I had a hypothesis about this guy, and it was not confirmed unless I missed it. My hypothesis was that he was one of the characters from Kinda, that he was one of the young people.
Nope.
I also thought that.
But yeah, this guy just, they just randomly insert him into the first three episodes, just to give you a little
so
bit
that
of...
when he finally shows up in the last one, you're not like, who? But you still are.
Well, no, they talk about who he is. There's a lot of, like, backstory about Dojin said by other characters. What was he? He was the director. There's a guy named Ambril, and he used to have that guy's job.
Yes.
And then he kind of went, like, very religious and ran off into the mountains to be with the snake dancers.
That just happens sometimes.
Yeah.
I have a little question to people who paid attention. The planet that this serial takes place on, is it the same planet?
No.
It confused the heck out of me for a good portion of it. It's a different planet, but they're related? Like, they're
just
ancestors?
The Mara have been on both, I suppose.
In Kinda, Divaloka is where the Mara kind of flees to after it's defeated on the... I actually can't remember the name of the planet, Snake Dance, even though I just watched it this morning.
Manusa or something like that?
Totally separate planets. I would say that the old man, as you said, you know, he's set up so we know what he is later. He's essentially Chekhov's gun. If Chekhov's gun was an old man who's really into crystals.
Which turns out it is.
Chekhov's gun?
Yeah, it's an old man who's really into crystals. They recently discovered that to be the case.
It's a Russian translation error. That's what it is.
Yeah. I thought it had something to do with Star Trek. I don't know a lot of things. So let's get past this guy in the desert, because he's very unimportant for a very long time. Well, let's get to something more important.
Nyssa's
new
outfit.
I'd wear that.
One of many 80s-inspired looks in this particular story that is possibly the most new romantic in design that Doctor Who's ever been, I think.
I love it a lot. I do think maybe it's a bad idea to have stripes on film, because it, like, gets all...
It freaks out the sensors.
I believe they call that moiré pattern?
Yes, thank you.
See, you know some things, Vince.
Yeah, but not things that happened in the episode.
You know things related to what happened in the episode. But she is desperately trying to get the Doctor to notice her new outfit, and the Doctor is completely oblivious, which is in character. He's done that before.
Sure.
He's more concerned about the fact that the coordinates have been changed on the TARDIS, and they figure out that Tegan must have done it.
Tegan's just taking a nap.
And she is having a nightmare where she's back in that void, that black void that she was, I guess it's the same void from Kinda, but then it turns into like a snake mouth cave thing that she floats up in CSO glory. I think it's really cool. I love when Doctor Who gets, like, visually trippy.
I should mention, by the way, that I have seen a total of 3 Fifth Doctor serials. The first one I saw was The Five Doctors. The second I saw was Kinda. And the third I saw was Snake Dance. Because I'm way behind, so I had to jump ahead for this podcast.
To be fair, you've already seen most of the good stuff.
I was going
to
say, I can recommend about 3 more, and then you can... probably leave it.
I'm still on the Fourth Doctor, so.
Thanks for jumping ahead for our podcast. We specifically said, be sure to watch Kinda before watching this one, because this one is a direct sequel.
Yeah, that made sense. That was a good recommendation.
Because, like, I feel like the only other thing that you're, like, might need to know is Adric's not here anymore. There's a very, very brief reference to Omega at the beginning of this serial. Because they've been doing that every serial. They'll just be like a little bit at the beginning where they're like, hey, remember what happened last time? It's not important. Let's move on. They even do that with Adric. When they get rid of Adric, they're like, remember Adric? Oh, yeah,
I'm sad
fine.
That
moving
Adric
on.
Died. Okay.
So when they're like, well, the coordinates have been changed or whatever, Nyssa says something about, could it be some residual Omega interference or something, and the Doctor's like, no, that's dumb, moving on.
Now we've acknowledged that we're serialized now, okay.
Yeah, but you do need to see Kinda to fully appreciate this one. You might be able to understand this one without seeing Kinda, but I feel like it helps.
Honestly, I didn't fully understand Kinda to begin with.
I mean, that's fair. It's a very weird serial, but God, I love it so much.
Yeah, I didn't go in knowing any of the secondary characters, so that made it a little hard to follow. because like I feel like it probably helps to know who Tegan is.
No. She's not, she doesn't especially really become developed much at that point, to be honest.
Yeah. Like, Kendo was the first episode where I was like, I think I like Tegan. Whereas before, she was mostly just kind of there. And Nissa, of course, isn't even really in Kendo.
She just took a nap.
But, yeah, I feel like you do need to see Kendo to appreciate this. I feel like Snake Dance clears up some stuff that happens in Kenda, like clears up the mythology a little bit.
Yeah, I feel like I got a lot more context out of Snake Dance than Kenda, which, by the way, I can't say Snake Dance without hearing Bassman in my head.
I can't not hear Bat Dance.
I just goes, Snake Dance, I always... That's the song by what are their names?
Babylon Zoo.
Yeah, them.
Never heard it.
I think it's a European thing.
Yeah, it was in a Levi's advert over here, and it was massive in the, I want to say, mid-90s. You're not missing out on a lot.
It's got a pitched-up chorus, and the verses are not. It's a band. I don't know.
Well, release your remix, and we'll edit it into the podcast.
No.
Okay. So she's having this nightmare about cave snakes. Snake Cave. Snake Dream.
Cave of Snakes is my title, by the way.
Man, I miss those good old The Cave of episodes. So we cut to, there's a snake statue that has a crystal in its mouth. And we see the owner of this statue, I guess. And his name is Lon. And he's apparently famous, but I've not seen him in anything. I've seen him on the covers of like British shows, like Doc Martin and...
Martin Clunes, this is while before he hit big. He got really known in this country for Men Behaving Badly, which was like a 90s sitcom, BBC sitcom, big over here. And yeah, he's been one of these people, he's kind of on TV constantly. He's never like really made, say, the leap to film or anything, but he's been a, I guess what you'd call a consistent TV actor. And you're right, like Dr. Martin was the last thing I think he was in that was big. But this is, Snake Dance is, I think I first... probably saw at least a clip of Snake Dance. Particularly in the 90s, they used to quite regularly do these before they were famous shows. Mm. And of course, sharing Martin Clunes, who, you know, Men Behaving Badly, is playing a kind of a lad, drunken lager, showing him like being louche and wearing makeup and going kill them. Inevitably, the clips were used from Snake Dance.
I like this character a lot.
Which of the characters are we talking about? I'm trying to piece the memories together.
Lon, he's the boy.
The little shit.
The son.
Oh, the early Culkin prototype.
Yes.
Why did you say so? This guy looks exactly like an early Culkin prototype.
Like, I love all of his outfits, even the ones that I have discovered people find very silly. I love them all.
You are right, and you should say it.
He's got that cool ass snake earring.
He's a little shit.
Yeah, he's a little shit.
Yeah, I enjoyed his shitness.
He does look like he should have been on the cover of like Enemy in the early 80s with his synth new romantic band. But no, I think he's brilliant in this. I think he's so good because he is so good at playing like you just said, like that little shit, that kind of bored aristocratic son, just looking for kicks and. No, it's a fantastic performance.
So I used to work at Barnes & Noble, and we had a Doctor Who set up, like a whole section of Doctor Who DVDs and stuff. So I've seen the cover of Snake Dance a bunch of times, and for the longest time, I don't know why, but I saw the picture of him on the cover and assumed it was just that the character was a lesbian. I don't know why. I thought it was a woman with very, I don't know, lesbian tropey... outfit stuff going on, and I dug it. I was like, that is a good aesthetic.
I mean, I think you can make an argument that the character is coded to be gay, maybe not a gay woman. But yeah, I mean, it's like I said, there is a reason Snake Dance clips always get used when people would go Martin Clunes before he was famous.
This was like his first television appearance, or second, first or second. I think he had like a very minor role in something else before this, but like this was like his first sort of major television appearance because he's playing sort of a more main character. But I think he does a great job. I like his character a lot. He's very funny and very just good. He's just good. So Tegan is asked about her dream by the doctor, and she openly tells everything. Whereas the last time the Doctor asked her about her dreams in Kinda, she said,
dreams are private.
So then we meet Tana, or is that how you pronounce it? Tanha? I don't remember. Lon's mother. And she wants him to go to the caves. They're all supposed to go to the caves, but he doesn't want to. But he's bored. He's a very rich, spoiled boy. But they're about to do a big anniversary ceremony. It's been 500 years since the defeat of the Mara by the Federation. I guess Lon's dad was the Federator. I don't remember. He's still alive, but I don't think we ever see him.
He's very sick.
Is he?
He's like dying, I think.
Something.
If I remember correctly.
I don't know. I don't think we ever see him, but they talk about him. But I do think he's not dead. But he's going to be the Federator? Is that? I don't remember.
He'll take over. He's obviously like a... It's not a position you get on merit.
And so Lon's going to be doing the ceremony because he is the son of the Federator.
I do like how much she's like... That's the whole point of being rich and in power, is to, like, do whatever the fuck you want. That's his mom's whole deal.
And then Tana sort of starts going into some exposition about the director, Ambril, who will show up in a little bit, and his predecessor, which we'll later learn is Dojin, and their respective beliefs in the legend of the return, which is this sort of thing about, like, the Mara will eventually return, and whether or not that's... Dojin believed in it, and that's kind of why he went off and sort of left everybody and went to the Snake Dancers. And Ambril thinks it's all just a bunch of bullshit mythology that's not real, but, you know, he appreciates the history of it, but doesn't think it's a real thing. He's sort of the stuffy, boring guy. Yeah, when I say boring, I mean the show thinks he's boring, too. They play it for comedy.
He's the serious guy.
Who gets very annoyed at the Doctor a lot.
He's great, though, actually. I really like him in this. I think he's really... He plays kind of the perfect Doctor Who official idiot.
So the Doctor says they need to figure out this dream thing, because dreams are important.
Dreams are private.
Dreams are private, and they're important. And talks about a frogman dream, which I like that little story, which is a guy had a dream that he was a frog, but then didn't know...
When he woke up, he didn't know if he was...
A man had a dream that he was a frog, or a frog that had a dream that he was a man.
Are you a frog?
Is this the moment when the Doctor's inventing the iPod?
Yes, he's inventing the iPod. Or at the very least, a Walkman. He's making his hypnotism device for Tegan. He puts it on, and then they hypnotize her.
I hate that thing, by the way.
Yeah?
It puts her in, like, a terrifying... I don't know, a terrifying state where she's, like, just barely conscious.
Oh, well, that's actually later. Before they do that thing, they actually hypnotize, they, like, have her regress and stuff. And then she recounts the entire plot of Kinda.
Just in case you didn't have a friend to tell you to watch it.
Yeah. I mean, it's not a very thorough explanation of it. It's mostly just, like, hitting the highlights. And if you didn't know what it was about, you'd probably be like, what does all that mean? And then she regresses to a 6-year-old who's talking about her garden.
I like the way she, because they ask her how old she is, and she's like, I'm 6, silly.
And the Doctor keeps going like, we have to go deeper. She wants her to go into the dream and go into the cave. And then at that point, the Mara, who's still inside of her, says, go away. She does that like thing where it's not her voice. It's that, go away thing. Meanwhile, there's still a lot of just, like, trying to drag Lon to the caves, and he doesn't want to go. Oh, yeah, I also want to mention Tana's talking about that her and her husband went to meet the Snake Dancers at one point, and she's very racist about it. She's talking about, like, how, you know, they had snakes, and they were all very dirty, and wore these, like, you know, outfits, and it was disgusting, is what she says. It's very disgusting. I was like, that's rude.
This is definitely one of those anti-colonialism themes that creep in Doctor Who from time to time, I think, because they all talk about being the Federation, which you presume was an outside force that came to the planet. I mean, it's never stated, but you pick up, and that's when you've got, like, the director, who's really interested in the past, but only as objects. He doesn't, like, believe, like, so he doesn't believe, like, the Mara's coming back or anything. He just thinks of it as collectible bits and bobs. So she's all like, oh, you're very dirty, which is, a very British kind of racism right there for you.
Yeah, it was even a theme, the colonialism stuff was definitely a theme even in Kinda, too.
Oh, God,
well,
yeah.
Doctor Who, political? What?
Not back in my day.
No, everyone knows Doctor Who only became political in 2017 when Jodie Whittaker was cast. Before then, it had never been political. Don't be ridiculous.
And then there's a great bit where Ambril does show up and says, let's go to the caves. And they talk about the statue. And he's like talking about how, like, you know, I don't know, valuable the snake statue is and stuff. And he's like, oh, I didn't realize that. And he like goes to fake throw it to Ambril. And he's like,
I'm just kidding. And then
he actually
chucks it.
Throws it.
Yeah, I like that moment.
There's a lot of good little like comedy beats like that throughout this serial.
Yeah, got some good bits.
Then we see the marketplace, and we meet one of my favorite characters in this serial. I think his name is Dugdale, though I don't think it's ever actually said in the serial.
Is it just in the credits?
It's just in the credits, but it's this sort of guy who's doing his like spiel about, come enter my Hall of Mirrors!
And I got excited, because I thought we were going to get Hall of Mirrors in Ark of Infinity. And they didn't, and I was like, finally.
Yeah, because you thought they were going to do that when Omega turned and looked like the Doctor. And
you have two characters that look the same, and I thought you would do like a Hall of Mirrors thing with that, but they did not.
But I mean, mirrors make sense with this serial because there was the whole mirror thing in Kinda.
I'm sorry, how many syllables are in the word mirror?
Mirror? There's eight. Fun fact about the guy who plays Dugdale, the owner of the Hall of Mirrors, he was married to Sarah Jane in real life.
Huh.
He was married to a fictional character in real life?
Yeah.
That's a true fan.
That's some people's bag.
I mean, that's what they call a waifu, right?
I only said that because I temporarily blanked on what her real name was. Elizabeth Sladen. He was married to her.
And he's also in a Deep Breath as the tramp.
I think he was also on an episode or two, maybe, of Sarah Jane Adventures, I think, at some point, which makes sense. Anyway, he does this whole, like, pitch of, like, come look at my Hall of Mirrors, and it's super great, and you'll love it. And he's doing this to Lon, and Lon's asking him, like, what's so great about this place? And then he's doing his spiel, and he realizes when, like, his mom and Ambril show up, oh, shit, these guys are royalty. And he just instantly just drops the act. And he's just like, oh, it's just some mirrors. People think it's neat. I don't know.
I'm sorry.
There's another similar moment with the crystal ball with the seer who reveals to Tegan.
Yeah, that she just makes it up.
Yeah, I just look into it. I wave my hands and I make something up. Sometimes it's good, and I like that moment because it was very sort of honest, and I like that, and I find it interesting that this serial kind of takes two different approaches to skepticism. It has these moments of like, this is what it is. And then there are moments of people saying this is what it is and being wrong. In part two, I mean, I'm jumping ahead a little bit, but I wrote down this line. It appeals to a certain type of mind, primitive, lazy, uneducated type of mind. Even my assistant here isn't immune. You'll find that the legend becomes more and more vague the closer it approaches anything resembling any factual detail. Which is, of course, you know, it's a colonial mindset thing, but it's also kind of a skeptical thing. And in many cases, this is something that can be said about like conspiracy theories and superstitions and various things. But it's in the story, the character is, of course, wrong. But I find it interesting that they kind of juxtapose that or contrast it with the situation with the seer who just openly says, no, this is, I'm just making it up.
I was going to say, it's interesting how, like, you got a character like the director who's, like, who absolutely believes that this planet used to be run by a giant pink psychic snake, but then is like, but it couldn't come back. That's ridiculous. Which is just like, well, it's a giant pink psychic snake. What do you know that it can do? It's, you know, he doesn't not believe in the Mara. It's just the idea that the Mara could come back for some reason is inconceivable.
There's also a lot of, like, I feel like, things about, like, tradition and, like, keeping up tradition, even if you don't, like, super, like, believe in it. And that's, like, I feel like the same sort of thing here of just, they do these, like, old sort of, like, you know, look at my Hall of Mirrors and it's mystical, and look at this crystal ball, it's mystical, but they don't, like, believe it. They're just like, eh, it's just a thing we do.
Yeah, going through the motions of superstition without really taking it seriously.
I'm also a fan of the sort of inversion of, like, the doctor sort of shows up and seems like a character who's just spouting off conspiracy theory bullshit. Everyone thinks that, too. They're like, get that guy out of here. He's just babbling nonsense. And when he in those scenes, that's exactly what he looks like. He doesn't seem like he's...
Five is not a doctor that's like, I'm showing up and I'm calm and in control. Five shows up and he's like, holy shit, this is what's happening. And everybody's like, what?
He shows up and he's just like, giant fucking snakes, you guys. Giant fucking snakes. Also, like, I know this person and she's got, like, hypnotized to... And she's got the snake in her. And everyone's like, what the fuck is this guy talking about?
Yeah, telling him, I'm going, my friend has a giant pink snake inside of her. Is not, again, you're going to get some looks.
Well, I mean, some people are, you know, into that sort of thing.
I think it's one of the reasons this story works so well, actually, is that it's Davison's Doctor. I don't think this would be quite the same with Tom Baker or John Pertwee. You need somebody who's, you know, Davison's Doctor isn't so much an overwhelming presence. He's more like, say, Pat Troughton. You know, he's less dominating, perhaps, is what I'm looking for. So then it works, because you're right, he does look like he's completely mad, and you understand why everyone's a bit like, yeah, all right, bro, snake, got ya. Yeah, okay.
That's so good. I feel like this is an interesting way to write a story for this Doctor specifically. Like, yeah, you're right, like, Tom Baker would have just came in and been way too confident, and, like, everyone would have... He would have just been like, you're stupid for not believing me. Whereas this doctor is like, please believe me! It's true! What do I gotta do? And it's been sort of a theme. It's been happening a lot, I feel like, with Davison's, like, this one and Black Orchid and stuff like that. He's way less confident, but in a way I find more interesting.
This is when Tegan gets the little...
Yeah, they tweak the hypnotism device to block out her dreams.
But also, like, they show her, like, point of view, and it's, like, very narrow tunnel vision. She can only focus on so much at a time, and she just seems...
And she's deaf, too. She can't hear anything.
And she just seems out of it.
It does look a little bit like the Doctor slipped her some acid as well as gave her the device, because it's got that, yeah, the kind of... Well, it's kind of that almost traditional Doctor Who monster viewpoint effect, isn't it? That swirly effect in a tunnel vision.
And you just see her point of view, and all you hear is like, wah, and that's it. It's terrifying.
Yeah, it gave me a little bit of anxiety.
And, like, she's going out in, like, this very busy, crowded marketplace, and it's... That's how I feel whenever I'm, like, at a party.
There's, like, a lot going on, but you can only focus on so much at a time, and you're like, oh, what all else is happening?
Yeah, I can relate to that.
Lon, Tana, and Ambril go into the cave, which is a... First, I want to talk about
the design
all the sets for
of this serial's very good. It's very good in set pieces, and it's very good in costumes.
Because, like, the marketplace looks amazing. Even, like, Lon's house looks really cool. And, like, the cave looks really cool. I like the big snake mouth.
Well, and it's
entrance.
Very convincing. Set pieces on Doctor Who aren't all the time.
And, like, again, all the costumes and everything. So they go inside the cave, and even Lon is impressed. Ambril's trying to give a history lesson about the cave, and Lon just keeps going, big! Look how big it is!
It's so big in here! Whoa! Whoa!
Big! It's just, like, echoing his voice. They look at some pictograms, and... which describes sort of the legend of the return. There's a lot of, like, world building in this episode. Like, I feel like everything is, like, super believable, too.
This definitely feels like a place you could go to and visit, and not just, like, some place that was half created on sound stages somewhere.
Is it in the cave when there's an exchange between Lon and the director, when Lon's like, oh, you dig about for trinkets, and he's so offended by it, he's like, not trinkets, or classify, or something, and it's just... cracks me up for some reason every time, because he's so upset at the idea that Lon does think it's just trinkets.
Team TARDIS gets to the cave. The Doctor goes in while Nyssa stays outside to keep an eye on the terrified Tegan. She sees the snake cave and is like, this is the place for my nightmare. Why would you bring me here?
I mean, that is a fair question.
While the Doctor's inside, there is also a scene where, like, it's just Tegan and Nyssa chilling on the steps up to the snake mouth. And this guy comes up with some toy snakes. And they're like, please go away. And he's like, nah, I'm just going to shake it in your face.
Snake!
Huh? Snake! And Tegan runs off scared. Very rude.
Yeah, just go up and fucking trigger someone? That's super, super rude.
I mean, I understand. I too have a fear of cheap tourist crap that you buy. So, you know.
Oh, man. It reminds me of the... I went to L.A. for the first time ever. And we went down, like, some strip, some, like, street. I don't even remember. It's, like, the big touristy area. And there's just, like, tons of people in costumes and stuff. And, like, people just handing out their CDs. They're just like, here, take this. And I'm like, what? And I take it. And he's like, all right, that'll be $20. And I'm like, what? No. Like, I understand the fear of this.
You didn't know.
Scene. I didn't know. And, like, I got stuck in a conversation with him. And I was with Ray, who's been on the podcast before. And Ray turned around and was like, what the fuck are you doing? You can't. You have to ignore people. You have to put blinders on, which Tegan has, and she still can't escape it. But yeah, this scene checks out. It happens in real life. Inside, we also get to see the snake mural, which has a hole in its mouth where the crystal goes that they're talking about. There was a crystal that goes there, and Ambril has the crystal, and he keeps it safe. They use a fake crystal for like the ceremonies and stuff. But that mural looks really cool. I like the design of that a lot. And then Tana, and he's sort of telling the story about the defeat of the Mara and all that. And Lon's mom's looking up at the mural and she's like, this is all very horrible. And he's like, well, it's a good thing it's just a story then. And then the doctor pops out and says, well, actually, and immediately gets grabbed by a guard.
So the doctor's kind of a Twitter reply guy. Somebody goes with this and he goes, well, actually, I'm going to correct you.
It's not a story. It's all real. You're not a real Mara fan. So he says what's going on and sounds completely ridiculous. And he's like, but I'll show you Tegan to prove it. And then they can't find Tegan because Tegan's ran off. And Lon finds all of this very amusing. He's just sort of playing along. And then he's like, eh, let him go. I don't give a... Like, they've run off and they're like, should we go grab him? Because they're like, you know, causing trouble or whatever. And he's like, I don't give a shit. Just let him go. Tegan ran off into the marketplace and collapsed and was found by the fortune teller that we talked about earlier. And the fortune teller takes out her iPod and sort of talks about her fortune teller business. And Tegan turns basically into the Mara and is like, look at your crystal. Because she's like, there's nothing in the crystal ball. And she's like, well, look at it now. And the fortune teller looks at the crystal ball and there's a snake skull in it that like zooms out in the crystal ball explodes. That was like legitimately like creepy.
It was creepy, but also like aesthetically, I dug it.
Yeah, creepy and cool. But that is the end of episode one. And we are now into episode two, which I have called Snake Doubt.
Hey.
I said that the previous episode was Cave of Snakes. It's Cave of Nightmares. This is Cave of Snakes.
Okay. Oh, you're going to do all the cave of?
Maybe.
And then the end of that scene is Tegan left. Nothing really happened or anything. Just Tegan left. Well, the fortune teller freaks out.
I mean, that's fair.
Like, they have to come get her and stuff because she's, like, yeah, hysterical. And, like, Tegan is just, like, hiding in the audience, cracking up about it. So the doctor and Nyssa go to the TARDIS to look up info on this stuff, but they don't find out much. So the doctor's like, I'm gonna go talk to Ambril, the director, while Nyssa goes to look for Tegan. There's a pretty another solid gag that I like where they're like, well, let's go do this thing, let's go. And like the doctor starts heading towards the door and Nyssa opens the door. She pulls the lever to open the door and the doctor walking by shoves it again, not seeing that she's already done the lever. And then he just stands there at the door like an idiot for a second. And then Nyssa pulls the lever again and then they leave. Small things like that they tend to be my favorite moments in a serial. Just the little small gags.
Well, it adds some life to the scene. It adds some character to the action.
So Nyssa goes to look for Tegan, but Tegan finds Nyssa and does that tap you on the shoulder and then duck away thing that I do to Tony all the time. Mm-hmm. And she hates it. And she's laughing about having freaked out the fortune teller. And then Nyssa's like, whoa, that's rude. And Tegan actually breaks through for a moment and is like trying to talk to, like, get help. She's like...
Trying to do get help?
She's trying to do get help.
Get help!
She's like, I think the Mara is back and it's through me. And then, like, you know, help me. And then goes right back to being the Mara and... runs off, runs away. The doctor goes to Ambril, learns about the ceremony that is going to happen, and he's like, oh, you can't let that happen. You have to cancel it. And Ambril goes, oh, all right, sure. Now get out. But like, he's, you know, he's just being a jerk. He's not actually going to cancel it. But I did like that bit because he's like, you need to cancel it immediately. And Ambril goes, okay, we'll do that. And the doctor's like, wait, what?
How great would it have been if the doctor just believed him and spent the rest of the serial just sitting around, like, drinking tea? It'd be fine. They're going to cancel it. It's fine. He promised. He said he was going to cancel it. Yeah, absolutely.
How different would this serial be if Ambril meant it? He's like, yeah, I'll cancel it. Why not? Just to be safe. But as I feel like we've learned, some of our political leaders don't care about safety. It's weird. These serials keep being politically relevant to today.
What's really weird about it is that there's never been politics in Doctor Who before. So it's weird how you keep finding it in there.
Well, obviously it wasn't political. It became political because the world changed to be like Doctor Who.
This is all Doctor Who's fault?
Yeah, Doctor Who made everything happen.
I blame Russell T. Davies's gay agenda.
So, Tegan hides in the Hall of Mirrors, which, by the way, when she goes through, like, it's not a door, it's like a curtain into the Hall of Mirrors, and every time she walks through it, it does this, like, tingling chime noise. Very good sound effect. And she laughs at the mirrors, and she has herself a good time bouncing up and down and doing a little dance. And then one of her reflections has a skull for a face. It's the snake skull from the crystal ball. I actually really like this effect. I thought it was very good.
I enjoy this whole scene.
Is this when it moved like a puppet head?
I mean, it happens a little bit later, but yeah, it talks to her, and the mouth opens and stuff. I like that a lot. It's creepy. It's good.
Yeah, I like that.
So Ambril is being unhelpful, doesn't want to help the doctor, but his assistant, Chella, is sort of more like interested in this stuff and thinks maybe the doctor isn't just crazy. They say something about the legend of the return, and Ambril doesn't want to talk about it because he's like, it's dumb. And so the doctor has to ask Chella about it. And he sort of says, you know, the morrow will return when the minds meet in the crystal. That's what the legend is. And Ambril says that the legends are nonsense and not even correct. And to prove this, he shows the doctor this artifact, the Six Faces of Delusion.
I love this joke so much.
But it only has five faces. And the doctor's like, well, what is it? And he's like, well, it's a headdress. And he's like, well, could you put it on? And he's like, yeah, I'll just rub my fingers all over this artifact and put my greasy head in it. Sure. And he puts it on, and then the doctor's like, so you said it's only has five faces. Well, actually...
Count them again.
This doctor is the well actually doctor. He's like, your face is the sixth face. Boom!
He's so offended by this, too.
Ambril's like, get the fuck out! We'll not have you questioning my authority. I do like this gag. I mean, it's very obvious, I feel like. Like, how did this guy not realize that the person wearing it would be the sixth face?
He's just that dumb, though. That's what happens when you believe your own bullshit too much. You stop being able to think thoughts.
You stop being able to think critically?
Yeah, it's real sad.
You get stuck in an echo chamber?
It's just you.
Yeah, it's an echo chamber of one. Yeah, Tegan is talking to a reflection. Doug Dale kind of sneaks in and is watching this. And I think we also get, like, some explanation of, like, why is these mirrors not working like they did in Kinda? And the snake's like, oh, it's not a circle. It only works if it's a circle. Gotta be completely in a circle. Otherwise, I fucking love mirrors.
Super true. Like, what they say in Kinda is, like, it can't stand to look at itself. And that's why a circle is lampshaded, but it's not well.
Tegan gets a sweet tattoo on her arm of a snake, as she did in Kinda.
You know, the third time's the charm. Gonna stick one of these days.
There isn't a third Mara episode, or serial, rather. There was going to be at one point, but I think the guy who wrote it is like, I can't figure it out.
I think Big Finish have done unsurprisingly, have done a follow-up featuring the Mara. But, I mean, I think the thing about the snake tattoo is there were things. I mean, it could have manifested as like some Chinese letters that you don't know what they mean or something.
Just says, snake prance.
There's going to be a new Who episode with a snake tramp stamp.
Yes! So, the doctor has left, and his Chella follows him out and is like, I somewhat believe you. and gives him a small crystal, blue crystal. I don't know why he does. Test this out.
Anyway, here's a gusher.
Anyway, here's a plot thing.
That's what it looks like. I literally bought gushers after we watched this one because I couldn't stop thinking about eating them afterwards.
And it's like always in the snake's mouth.
Yeah.
So it looks even more like a gusher.
And I bought them and I ate them and they were good.
Dugdale, after seeing Tegan talk to herself, and she's now fully become Mara. There is no Tegan, only Mara. He's very impressed at her performance and thinks that they should team up. They should do a duo. She yells at him a bit and makes him sort of her butt monkey in a way. Servant, I suppose.
I like that he's like, that's pretty good. That's a pretty good magic trick, right? Please
be a magic trick. So she sends him to go collect Lon. She wants Lon. So Dugdale goes to Lon and tells Lon that he's been summoned. And Lon, meanwhile, has refused to go to a party that his mom wants him to go to. And she's like, that's fine, because your attitude sucks. And then she leaves. And then she comes back and goes, please come to the party. But he doesn't. He stays behind. But he does go with Dugdale to go to the Hall of Mirrors. Tegan holds her hand out for him. And he goes up to take it, I guess. Greeting, I suppose. And then she just locks fingers with him. And he screams. And then he's also got a sweet tattoo.
Also, he's not that different.
No, his personality kind of bleeds through more than Tegan's does. It's just that he's already kind of a dick.
Yeah, like, well, we had a discussion about it when we were watching it, where it's like, I feel like part of the reason why that is because he's 90% going along with it, just out of sheer boredom.
Whereas Tegan was, like, protesting more. Where he's like
the amount of control being exerted over him is very little. It's more of, like, a suggestion. Like, hey, you want to fuck some shit up? And he's like, yeah, okay.
I kind of took it as, like, it's not as strong yet. Like, it becomes like that over time. Because, like, Tegan's was kind of dormant for a while, but influencing in some way. And then it kind of took hold more. I don't know. That's how I interpreted it.
I think the Doctor's got a line in the fourth episode about Lon still having a lot of his own personality. But yeah, but I think you're right. It's partly because his personality suits being a dick. So Mara's probably like, keep on being you, buddy. Keep on being you.
It's a much easier thing to do than with Tegan. So Tegan took a lot longer to sort of get into the swing of things, whereas this guy was like, oh, you already kind of want to do this? All right.
So kind of like vampires on Buffy, where like the demon uses what it has to work with, and if there's nothing to work with, it's totally different.
So, meanwhile, the Doctor and Nyssa have gone back to the cave to study the pictograms, and they sort of figure out what the pictograms are about, and, like, the crystal puzzle, which is, I think they figure out that the crystal, it's like a mental, that, like, tones mental energy or whatever. So they're gonna go test that out with the crystal he has. I don't know why they have to go to the TARDIS to do it. I don't know why they can't just do it in the cave. But they go all the way back to the TARDIS to test out the crystal.
I don't know.
There's no real reason for it.
This is an era that's really obsessed with getting as many TARDIS scenes in as it can. Like, I think you see the inside of the TARDIS during the Davison and during Colin Baker's era more than you do at any other point in the show. You know, like, Tom Baker tended to land, might have a scene in the TARDIS, goes out, maybe a scene in the TARDIS at the end, and that was it. But Agenti and Say would love their TARDIS scenes.
I mean, I like being in the TARDIS too, but...
Well, you have the set, might as well use it.
But I mean, you have the cave set too, so might as well use that as well.
Well, they used it a fair deal.
That's true. There's a brief scene at the dinner party where Ambrell is, again, just doing a lot of exposition about there was an advanced Minutian culture. It was, like, way more advanced than they are, even. And then it just sort of disappeared, like, overnight, presumably because of the Mara and whatnot. And just Tana is listening to this, very bored. And, like, at one point, she's even like, are we going to eat?
I love that moment, because I've been to parties like that. I've talked to people like that. We're just like, is there going to be food soon? Please end this. Is there going to be food? And she looks so pleadingly at him when he says it, and he just ignores her and carries on.
Yeah. She's like, yes, because the culture was like da-da-da, and she's just
I only came here for the snacks.
As a currently hungry person, can somewhat relate.
You're very bored by our just discussing the history of snake dance and just want some food.
Yeah.
So Lon, Tegan, and Doug Dale go to the cave, and Tegan is very mad about the missing crystal, but she pulls down her sleeve, sticks her snake tattoo to the wall, and it opens a secret door, those sort of snake mural parts, and they can go into the secret room. And Doug Dale goes in there and is very excited about all the treasure, but Lon doesn't super care. He's just like, I want to know more about the crystal. So let's talk about the crystal. So the doctor uses, they try to focus on the crystal and they can't do anything with it. So the doctor uses the iPod to remove distractions and concentrate on the crystal, and he makes it glow. They figure out that the crystal can make thoughts real. It like concentrates mental energy and turns it into a real thing, and it's going to make the Mara real again.
So this reminded me of the Green Lantern ring. I mean, it's not exactly the same, but like it's got a similar function.
Yeah, it used mental energy to make cool shit. Except in this case, it's bad guys using it to make snake people real.
To make snake.
Back at the dinner party, the doctor's like, we got to tell them that this is all real. They'll believe me this time. And he interrupts the dinner party and says, you know, stop everything, snakes. And is quickly taken away, dragged out of the room.
I mean, you've got to love his optimism on this. Like, he has no further proof. I mean, he's found out more, but he's got no further proof. He's like, but this time they won't think I'm a raving lunatic. Oh no, they think I'm a raving lunatic. And it's like, wow.
So Lon and Tegan figure they need to find the crystal, and they got to go do that. But they're like, what should we do with Doug Dale here? And Doug Dale's all like, oh, hey. You know, I could help you guys out, or I could just forget that I saw you. Whatever. I'm cool. I'll go with the flow.
Don't kill me.
And they're like, don't know about that. And then they just keep saying to look at them. Because I think there's like a just like to sort of cement the Mara's control, you have to look at them. That's part of what the mirror was about, I suppose. To sort of more cement their taking over.
The control.
Taking control of Tegan was to just look into the skull. Basically, but he doesn't want to look, but then he looks, and Tegan's eyes are red as she says, look at me. And that's the cliffhanger. That's the end of episode 2. And we are now into episode 3, which I have called Snake Diary.
Okay.
Is that a spinoff of The Princess Diaries?
Yes. But weirdly, the spinoff came out years before the original did. Oh, do you have a cave title?
Cave of Crystals, or maybe that's part 4. No, it's Cave of Crystals. I think we'll go with that.
All right. So the doctor is put in a really awesome prison cell.
Oh, that set is great. It's moody as all get out.
It's like the wall, the bars don't go straight up and down. They like lean out a little bit in a way that just makes it look very interesting.
Just as well, it looks good because he's going to spend the rest of the episode there.
Right.
Yeah. This episode is probably the most fillery episode out of the serial. I mean, I still like it. There's a lot going on. But when I made GIFs for this episode, I was like 10 minutes in before I found anything visually interesting.
Yeah, I mean, there's not too many attempted escape. It's not quite Frontier in Space. You know, they don't keep escaping and getting brought back. And I guess they do learn things about it. Like, there's more stuff about the crystals. But it's a really interesting choice to keep the Doctor... I guess they just have to, otherwise we'll serve the plot too early.
Which is weird because, this is jumping ahead of it, but the ending of episode 4 is a little rushed, and there actually was like a more, like a sort of a scene after the end that sort of like tied up some of the loose ends a little bit. There was more of a like, let's talk about what just happened sort of scene that they had to cut because they ran out of time. And I was like, well, they could have cut some of that fillery stuff. In episode 3, and maybe, I mean, I guess you'd have to adjust your cliffhanger, but the cliffhanger of episode 3 also kind of sucks, so it's not the best cliffhanger.
It would be kind of useful for the Doctor to have some kind of a tool that could get him out of a cell, some kind of like a sound-based tool, perhaps, maybe like a, like some kind of a spanner or a screwdriver, maybe?
That sounds ridiculous. Also, Vince, I guess you probably know, but it's been destroyed.
I don't remember that.
Well, you haven't gotten there yet. You haven't seen it. And I guess that's one thing I could have also prepped you on. So, yeah, because I think J&T didn't like it.
I think his thing was it makes the Doctor too powerful. So, obviously, the advantage of the Doctor not being too powerful is he spends entire episodes in jail, I guess. It's a choice.
I don't know if it's a good choice, but it's a choice. The Doctor is in his prison cage, and he talks with Chella a bit. It's basically what happens is Chella just keeps coming in and giving him plot points. Speaking of cages, Lon returns home and is very cagey. Hey!
Okay.
That happened.
Okay, so when I initially watched this scene, I didn't realize what was happening, and I feel stupid for not realizing. He's holding a cup behind his back, but it's the cup he got out of the thing. And I thought he was trying to hide the cup. But he does just give it to his mom, and I was like, well, one, and then he gets it back, and I was like, why was he trying to hide that? I'm an idiot. He was hiding his tattoo.
He was hiding the snake.
Yeah, he was hiding his snake tattoo. Then he goes to his room and puts on some giant ass red gloves that look cool as hell.
Which are great.
Like red leather. Very nice. He changes those out for a different pair of red gloves, which look brighter red, and they make his, they look like, you know when you get those like lobster claw oven mitts?
Yeah.
Nope.
Though they look like lobster claw oven mitts that he wears later. But right now they look just like dark red leather gloves. They're very cool.
Red leather, yellow leather.
So Nyssa sort of sneaks in and finds the Doctor and is going to try to help him break out. Meanwhile, Ambril gives his assistant Chella Dojin's diary. This is where the title of this episode comes from. And has him read stuff to sort of be like, see, he went crazy. He's not to be, like, Dojin didn't know what he was talking about. But, like, Chella reads it and is like, this is actually interesting and ties in with a lot of stuff the Doctor's been saying. So he takes the diary to the Doctor for him to read. And I think there is one point where they're talking about Dojin and it cuts to a shot of that guy in the desert. And I don't think they had any shots of him in the second episode. And so they have to be like, hey, don't forget this guy. Also, we're kind of sort of hinting that this is Dojin. So while he brings the Doctor the diary, the Doctor says something like, Nyssa is hiding, so she can't be seen. And the Doctor's like, you couldn't have brought me something more useful? Like, the key to get out of this cell? Chella's like, I don't have the key. And he's like, oh, I suppose that's probably in Ambril's office? He's like, yeah, probably. The Doctor's like, yeah, the key is in Ambril's office? And Nyssa sneaks out. I thought that was very good. So Lon, meanwhile, comes to Ambril and says, hey, I had this great idea for the ceremony. What if we use the real crystal that you have, that you said you have? Let's use that in the ceremony. Put that in the snake's mouth. That'd be pretty great, right? And Ambril's like, no, we can't do that. It's too priceless. And then Lon's like this? And holds up the cup. Ambril legitimately does a double take. Like, what? What? And is very excited, and he's like, where did you get this? And he's like, oh, I was in the cave, and I found this room, and it just was scattered all over the place. And he's like, scattered all over the place? How much? Was there a lot? He's like, yeah, sure, why not? I can give you more if you'll let me put that crystal in the snake's mouth. Seems like a decent trade. And so they're actually going to go look at the... Lon's going to go take him to the cave so he can see.
I really like, by the way, the entrance to this, like, the secret room in the cave.
The mural?
The door.
Where she puts her arm to it?
Slides open.
Nyssa finds the key, but is immediately caught by Lon's mom. Like, what you doing? Ambril and Lon are going towards the cave, but they get distracted a bit by a Punch and Judy show? And Snake. Punch and Judy and Snake. Snake Punch.
I was trying to figure out what, because one of the puppets in the show had a weird voice effect of some sort, the one that was hard to understand, and I couldn't figure out what it was, if it was like an effect box or something, or if it was like a physical thing that somebody put in their mouth to do that voice.
I think with Punch and Judy shows it's a physical thing in the mouth, but I'm not 100% certain.
Do they usually have that?
That kind of voice, yeah.
I've never actually seen a Punch and Judy show. I've seen references and stuff, but...
I'm not sure there's something that's really traveled much outside of this country, but it's... Well, I mean, what you see in Snake Dance, where the mara, the snake, comes in, it would normally be a crocodile.
Oh.
Don't ask me why. I don't know. It's one of those... It's like trying to explain pantomime. I don't know how to. But, yeah, where you see... It's almost exactly like a normal Punch and Judy show, but
with the Mara instead of a crocodile.
I knew that it was Punch and Judy. I didn't know about the crocodile.
I mean, it reminds me a little bit of the Kinder, the jester in Kinder, you know, the guy with the little puppet.
Oh, yeah. And they thought the doctor was a clown, too.
I have fantastic news.
What?
It is a physical device, and it's called a swazzle.
There you go, Vance. It's a swazzle.
Swazzle? I gotta look that up. Because I need to get a swazzle. Yeah, I guess so. Swazzle, also known as a swazzle. Swazzle or swatchel? Swatchel? It's a device made of two strips of metal bound around a cotton tape reed. That makes sense. I mean, I can picture it. I don't see a picture of it, but like I can imagine something like that making a sound like that.
So I haven't seen the rest of the 20th season of Doctor Who yet, but this is the second serial out of two serials this season that have had like a puppet show in them. Because there was one at the end of Ark of Infinity as well that Omega checks out and enjoys. Is there a puppet show in every serial this season? God, I hope so.
I don't want to spoil that for you.
God, I hope so. I really hope that there's a puppet show every serial.
I'll let you know that actually the next Mordred Undead is actually all puppets.
Yes! I hope you're not joking. You probably are, but I hope you're not. While they're at this show, they also get some glow sticks, so they can see in the cave, I guess.
A sweet snake rave that they're going to later.
A rave in a cave.
Yeah, I was just about to say Cave of Raves.
There you go, that's what this one is. Cave of Raves. So Nyssa is put in the cell with the doctor, so her attempts to help him escape have been foiled, and now they're just both in the cell for the rest of the episode. So Lon blindfolds Ambril, takes him to the into the cave, because he doesn't want him to know exactly where it is, but if he goes in blindfolded, he'll let him take credit for finding all of this stuff. And then Ambril gets in there, sees the treasure, and is going nuts, and then he sees Dugdale mindlessly just doing his spiel, like, come on, come on, children, half price! Just while, like, shaking his head back and forth like he's a freaking Chuck E. Cheese animatronic. It's very creepy. Then both Lon and Tegan sort of intimidate Ambril and are just like, give us that crystal. We want that crystal. Yet again, Lon is throwing things at Ambril. He's like throwing the treasure at him. He's like, you know, this could all be yours. You could have saved all of it. And he smashes it to the one piece to the ground. And he's like, fine. I'll let you use the crystal. Just don't break anything else. All these precious valuables.
All these precious little trinkets.
So the doctor and Nyssa have been reading the diary, and they sort of figure out a bunch of stuff, that the crystal was man-made, and they learn about the snake dance, and it was a purification ritual. That's what all they do, is they just occasionally go, oh, I read this interesting bit. And they realize that the crystal that makes things real amplified the Minutians, I guess, bad thoughts, evil thoughts, and they actually created the Mara. That sucks.
So that's pretty bad.
I mean, that's kind of where deities come from, just realistically.
I like to think, though, the point originally they just created it to do something like, we're going to make the perfect ice cream. And then, like, perfect ice cream. Oh, no, we've accidentally created a giant psychic snake. What do we do? Just because I wanted that ultimate vanilla fudge flavor.
Who keeps thinking about snakes? Stop it!
It's a little bit the end of Ghostbusters thing as well.
Yeah, which one of you guys thought of the giant snake? Oh, sorry, I wasn't thinking about ice cream.
Oh man, could you imagine if Kinda and Snake Dance were about a giant marshmallow man instead of a snake?
I thought you were going to say a giant ice cream man, and that'd be great. But also, defeating him's probably pretty easy, because you just have to wait.
It's summer! We've defeated evil yet again!
It just has to be slightly warm.
In Kinder, you know, Adric could have eaten him, because Adric's always eating.
I'm glad they gave Adric that characteristic of just like, I'm hungry. It gave him something other than being whiny.
By the way, am I the only one who read Kinder as Kinda, and then when they started saying Kinder, just heard Kinder?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, I did the same thing. I was very disappointed that it wasn't Kinda. I don't know why. I kinda wanted it to be Kinda.
Kinda.
Lon and Ambril leave, and Tegan stays in the cave, I guess to just continue to mess around with Dugdale for no reason. And her tattoo inflates and becomes a real plastic snake.
Yeah, if there's something the BBC, particularly during the classic era, though, I think it's actually true of the new series as well, isn't especially good at, it's insects and snakes, yet they keep doing stories with them.
I will say the snake props, the ones that are supposed to be real snakes, are at least better than that giant rickety thing, as much as I love it in Kinda.
I think the most impressive CGI snake they've done on Doctor Who, I think, was the coiled snake that was a person.
Oh yeah, actually, yeah, to fair, that's, yeah, no, he's pretty good. He's pretty good. That is an exception. But it tends to be with clearly classic series, it's snakes or spiders. And it's just like spiders particularly. It's like, oh guys, maybe not, but
just keep doing it.
Yeah, gotta make use of all that papier-mâché.
I mean, I never had a problem with the original effect, because like you said, it's of the time. It's fine, you know. It's just like, I don't often bother with the CGI effects on the DVDs, because the CGI is just as dated by now anyway.
Yeah.
And also, that's not what I want to see. I want to know what it looked like. If I wanted to watch New Who, I'd just watch New Who.
Yeah, I like a good bad puppet.
It's like on the Day of the Daleks Special Edition, where they're like, we added more Daleks to the final fight. I'm like, oh, all right.
It doesn't make the story any better.
Yeah, it doesn't affect, you know, my favourite scenes in that story aren't to do with the battle at the end, but good for you. But it's like, did you just become, get into this field so you could do that? Was this your whole life goal when you first saw Day of the Daleks? You're like, I'm going to add more Daleks to that one day.
They changed the voices too, right? It's Nicholas Briggs.
Yeah. And again, I'm like, well, that's a thing if you want to do that. But
I don't get it. Like, I feel like that's more money that could have been spent animating a missing serial.
Yeah.
Lon and Ambril return to Ambril's office and tell Tana that they are going to put the crystal in the snake mouth. Chella, the assistant, is not happy about this.
He thinks this
is a bad idea.
It is forbidden.
It is forbidden. Why would we do that? So Chella grabs the cell key, the prison cell key, off the table and leaves, but Lon catches him doing it. But Chella breaks out the Doctor and Nissa, and he's like, I'm fully on your team now, because they're going to do some stupid stuff, and it's going to be bad. And then they run out and are immediately caught, cornered in a hallway, and Lon is there, and he's like, kill them. And Nissa screams. She screams so loud that the video distorts a little bit.
What?
Yeah. Like, it gets a little staticky.
Yeah, and this is the clip. This cliffhanger is what when I mentioned those before they were famous shows, this is the clip they always showed.
That they show that one, and they show that one, the one where in episode 4 where he walks out in his new ceremonial garb.
I think that outfit is amazing.
So that was the end of episode 3, and we are now into episode 4, which I have called Snake Death.
This one is the Cave of Rituals.
This outfit.
Hold on. I want you to hold on to your thoughts. I want us to get to it.
Okay, okay.
It's built up to it.
Okay. I'll wait, but I have a picture up now so that I can lovingly describe it.
So, they've been cornered. Lon says, kill them. Nissa screams. Tana's mom shows up and says, hey, stop that. Or Tana, the mom, shows up and says, hey, stop that. What are you doing? And Lon's like, they want to kill me. And she's like, do they? And the doctor's like, no, I don't.
I like how she's like, well, he said he did it. And if he wants to kill my son, he has to tell me. That's the law.
So they all sort of go back to Ambril's office to discuss whether or not they're going to murder people. Meanwhile, the ceremony is starting. They're doing parades in the streets, and they have this giant snake puppet that they dance around with.
I love the snake puppet because it feels like a reference to Kinda.
It looks better than the one in Kinda, even. It's fun, too. Like, and again, that's another part of like the world-building thing, I feel like. Like, this feels like something that would actually happen.
It feels like a real festival, yeah.
It's very pink.
Is it pink?
Yeah, it's pink. I mean, the one in Kinda's pink. It's pink and red.
This one was more pink.
It's pink and red.
Gotcha.
There is one shot where they're like circling it around and the camera is like sort of following the snake around as it's spinning in a circle. And it made me very nauseous. But I was also very excited. Like, I don't feel like there's been that type of camera work on the show before. That sort of severe of a shot. But that, like, kind of keeps being intercut, the sort of festival starting. I just love all that stuff. It just, like, it really sells this whole culture. Like I said, it feels very believable. They're in Ambril's office discussing things. The doctor realizes that Lon has a snake tattoo and straight up calls him evil and says evil will never succeed. And then Lon's like, yeah, they think I'm evil, Mom.
See, they think I'm evil and they want to kill me.
And then for some reason, he's like, I'm going to show him the crystal. Let's look at the crystal. I don't know why he's so adamant, like, let's take a look at the crystal.
It's a dick move. And he just wants to go, ha, which again is very Lon.
And then when they're doing that, the doctor takes that distraction to go, let's run. And they all run out. T'Hana sort of starts to get a little bit suspicious about what's going on. Because Ambrose is talking with Lon and says, you know, all the arrangements are still in place, right? I give you the crystal and I get what's coming to me, which is the treasure from the secret room. And Lon's like, yeah. And she's like, sort of like, what's going on? And why are you not showing your arm? And he's like, oh, I got a scratch. And she's like, well, let me look at it. And he's like, no. And then like, she gets very distant and weird. And I was like, oh, she's going to catch on and then like be helpful. But that doesn't actually happen. So they're the doctor and everybody, Dr. Chella and Nyssa are running away. They get touched by a demon. They must give the demon a coin.
I was going to say, you're saying this without any context.
Yeah.
It's like, it's...
No, I don't want to give any context.
It's a festival thing.
Yeah, it's a festival thing. There's a guy dressed up like a demon. And if he touches you, you got to give him a coin or you get water dumped on your head.
Which is it's a great scene of like interrupting this like action of like, hang on, we've got to take care of this very silly thing.
Chella gives a coin to the demon and then they Doctors bow at each other.
Not says, carry money.
And he says like, may the snake never bite you or something like that. And then the demon goes away and the doctor's like, if only it was that easy. So the doctor's like, what we need to do is we need to find Dojin.
And a coin.
A very large coin.
Because Dojin understands the gushers.
Chella's like, why didn't we just grab the crystal and destroy the crystal? And the doctor says, destroying the crystal will only postpone Tamara. And he wants to destroy it completely. He will only be happy if he can just completely eliminate this thing from the universe. Kill it dead. So the doctor says he's going to use his crystal to help Dojin find them. They're just basically going to like shoot out like, hey, come find me. And then Dojin will hopefully show up. They got to go to that desert set, though, in order to do that. And then here comes. Lon comes out in his new amazing outfit.
Okay.
And his mom loves it so much that she's like, oh, I'm sorry I ever doubted you. You look handsome.
He has, it's like a white tunic that stops right before his knees.
It's got blue clouds.
It's got blue clouds and like a yellow belt that I could only assume that you get from learning karate. Actually, yellow is like the first one, isn't it?
I never took karate, so I have no idea.
I feel like it is. And this headdress that has like rays, like the sun coming out, and this blue gem in the front. And he has those bright red gloves that go all the way up to his elbow. It looks amazing. And I'm a little annoyed that people play it to be like, look how silly. That shit looks great.
For me, it looks a little bit like if a children's TV presenter had a nervous breakdown and then formed a religious cult.
The ideal aesthetic.
I think it's the clouds. It's the clouds that make me think that for some reason. You know?
I mean, that sounds like something that happens in the UK a lot. I feel like that's an actual news headline that I've probably seen at some point.
So Dojin does arrive. He shows up. The doctor and Dojin sit across from each other, like cross-legged. And he pulls out a snake, real snake. This is the actual real snake that they use. Though I think they cut and then they have like a fake snake that's biting them. I believe on the making of, Peter Davison said that like this was the first time he'd ever actually held a snake ever.
Really?
And he was like, did not enjoy it. They let the snake bite their arms, both of them do, and then they start to communicate telepathically. The camera zooms way in on Dojin's face, and his eyeballs wiggle. Like, they put an effect on, so just the area around his eyes just sort of waves. And then he says a bunch of cool-ass shit.
This was when it got wiggly. That's when I thought it would cut to, like, a shot from Kenda of one of the young people.
That makes sense. But this is a completely different planet. So, but no, this is the guy that used to be a director. He used to have Ambrose's job, basically. But he says some stuff. They're like, how do we defeat, you know, the Mara? And he says some, like, you know, very wise things. He says, fear is the only poison. All there is the dance. Everything is the dance. All is the dance. And you need to find the still point. And the still point is inside you. And that's how you'll defeat Themara. You gotta find the still point in the chaos.
These are all his disco singles, and none of them did particularly well.
Dojin's disco singles. But I don't know, I liked all this stuff. It's very, like, I don't know, self-help guru stuff. But I thought it was all very well written. I liked the dialogue and stuff here.
Yeah, the world building overall was very strong in this serial. There was the specifics of the ritual felt very sort of natural to a ritual that would have formed over, I guess, generations. And it all felt very lived in.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, because that's the next thing is Lon has to do the triple temptation, basically. He gets a task, because they're like, who will stand up and defeat the Mara? And they have to ask it like three times before he'll say, I'll do it. And he does, and like, all of the dialogue is very, yeah, like, well thought out dialogue, I feel like. It feels like real, like this is actually a ceremony that would have happened. And he has to go through these temptations to prove that he is strong enough to defeat the Mara. And he's like, we put this dust in your hand. It represents fear. And he just lets the fear flow through his fingers. And there's like a branch of despair that he just drops to the floor. And it's all very
communion.
I liked it a lot. And then there's like the third temptation, which is the crystal in the snake's mouth. They have the fake one in the puppet. And it's like, it represents greed or whatever. And then he just goes to grab it. And they're like, oh, you can't do that yet.
they don't understand the one of the basic rules of improv, which is yes and.
And then Lon's like, I understand improv. I'm good. he's like, this is all fake. It's not real. And he smashes the crystal.
This is when we heighten the scene.
Oh, meanwhile, there's the doctor and everybody, Dr. Uchella and Nyssa are going back to the cave to try to stop the ceremony, I guess. There's another small scene that I enjoy where they're getting there and there's like a, I don't know, like a little ledge or something. And the doctor picks Nyssa up and sets her down and she goes, thank you, but it wasn't necessary. And Chella gives this face at the doctor like, whoa, you're in trouble.
You're in trouble? She told you?
Small comedy moments are my favorite. Then things are just starting to escalate in the cave. Lon goes for the real crystal, reveals his snake tattoo, and he opens the door with his snake tattoo, and Tegan comes out. They put the crystal in the snake's mouth, and everyone grabs their heads in pain. When they put the crystal in the snake's mouth, too, the mural, like, lights up. And it's very cool looking. The snake that's grown off of Tegan's arm, she sets it down on the ground and, like, it starts to grow and get bigger. And the doctor comes in and is yelling at everyone to stop believing. Because, like, if they believe that this bad stuff's actually happening, the Mara is real, that will... Because it's taking all of their energy to make the Mara real. And he's like, stop believing in it and find your still point. That's the only way to stop it. You got to find the still point. And then Tegan merges with the snake. Like, the snake has its mouth wide open and her face is in the mouth, and it looks a little silly, not as silly as Kenda, but it also does look disturbing.
Yeah, it's like there's the shot of the snake and there's the shot of her, and it kind of fades between them, and then it just sort of superimposes her face in the mouth.
Like, it's not the most convincing thing ever, but it also is still somehow, like, weirdly effective. Where,
yeah,
you're just,
it's unsettling.
Like, oh no, that's, yeah, bad.
It looks like something from an early Tim Burton film. And the doctor starts concentrating on his crystal to sort of find his still point, I guess. And the Mara is trying to, like, get him to look at her. And at one point, the Mara seemingly reverts back to Tegan, which I thought was messed up. But it's not. It's not really Tegan. It's still just the Mara trying to trick him. And the doctor's like, I won't pay attention to that. And it eventually works. Dojin also taps in mentally to sort of help them. Dugdale and Lon both try to pull the crystal out of the doctor's hands, but get burnt by it. And the doctor grabs the great crystal out of the wall, and the snake falls down and gets very gooey. It's been a very gooey era.
Oh, it's too gooey. I would like to request that it stop being so gooey.
It's just like pink goo is just oozing out of its mouth. Its gusher has melted.
Ugh.
Everyone sort of comes to their senses. Tegan cries a lot, and the doctor goes to comfort her and says, and she's just like, this is traumatic. I was experiencing all of this evil, hateful things. And he's like, don't worry about it. The Mara's been destroyed now. And then close up on gooey snake mouth, and that's the end of the serial.
Whew.
Yeah, really just blowing past that trauma there. Like, oh, it'll be fine. You're traumatized, but let's just move on.
I actually really like this ending, because I know you said earlier that there is a scene on the DVD cutscene where they have a bit more of an, everyone has a little bit of a chat and it's all good and we're going to go now. Cheers, guys. But I watched that and I thought, oh no, it definitely ends at the right moment.
Yeah, it's effective.
Yeah, it's a lot. It's probably one of my favorite endings in the classic series, actually, because that's generally not what they go for. Usually they have the blah, 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 we're all heading off, see ya, bye. But this is just a bit more, the thing is, and this is one of the faults of this era, is they're not going to pick up on Tegan's trauma in the next episode. I think it gets a brief mention at the start, and then they go, yeah, and they go, right, next adventure. But it's just so effective, the Doctor trying to comfort her. She's distraught, we haven't really touched on it, but Janet Fielding's really good as a villain in this. Like, she is so good, and you forget, actually, Tegan is, after the first episode, she is completely possessed. I think it's the longest possession, because companions have been possessed or hypnotized before, but never for the majority of the story, I think.
And she is so good at it. Like, I think she's better at being the Mara than she is at being Tegan, so.
No, I've nailed it.
It's a very good serial.
That's a very good impression of the Mara.
But that's it. That's the end of Snake Dance. We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be back for final thoughts.
I'm Brittany Vetrino.
And I'm Martha Bartlett. We've been nerds since day one, and we love to talk.
And now we're your hosts of But First, Let's Talk Nerdy.
Come listen if you like anything from comics, anime, video games, sci-fi, and even history.
Just sit back, relax, even join us with a drink in hand, because we'll have one in ours too, and come talk nerdy with us every Tuesday.
We are now a proud member of the ESO Network, and you can download wherever you like to listen.
See you next Tuesday.
And we're back. Tony, do you know what time it is?
It is about 3:01.
Yep, and what time does that mean for the podcast?
It's the time where we do this, where you ask me what time it is, and then I pretend that I don't understand what you're saying.
Yep.
And then we kind of have a back and forth before eventually I just say that it's time for final thoughts.
Yes. And? I don't know. I just feel like we have to do the improv thing, because Adam was chastising people earlier.
Chastising is a little harsh.
Well, the thing about yes and is it's not that you're supposed to say yes and.
Is that why all of my improv partners
you're supposed
have been
to
very
come
mad
up
at
with
me?
The and, not me.
So it's time for final thoughts.
Final thoughts.
How do we want to do this?
I think guess first. That's polite.
I think we should alternate.
And now is the time for the deathmatch rap battle to decide who goes first.
All right, so let the rap battle commence. We'll let Adam go first to do the rap battle to decide who goes first on final thoughts. I can go ahead and get you started. You can just say, my name is Adam, and I'm here to say...
Yeah, and that's about as far as my rap ability goes, so...
I was going to do that.
What, say your name is Adam?
I was going to say what I was here to say, but I'm not really here to say much.
Yeah, I mean, if I'd known this was going to happen, I'd have written down my final thoughts on Snake Dance in rap beforehand and then really impressed you when I came in. But I didn't, sadly, I didn't know this was going to happen.
Yeah, I didn't do that either.
Here's my stance on Snake Dance.
Yeah, this has been Snake in 2, Electric Boogaloo.
All right, Adam, you get to go first.
My final thoughts on this is that it's absolutely fantastic. I think it's definitely one of the best Davison stories. It's a great script. We've talked about the world building and the themes that come through. All the actors are good in this. There isn't a weak performance in it. Everyone is bringing their A game. I think it's definitely one of the best uses of Davison's Doctor. It knows how to use him, and it uses him so well. Yeah, I think it's a real shame that Christopher Bailey only wrote 2 scripts for the series. You know, ideally, I'd like to have seen him come back at least a couple more times.
I do think it was his own decision and not to come back. But...
Yeah, I mean, I don't think Saywood was a huge fan of his. It was Bidmead, I think, who originally commissioned Kinder, and I think Snake Dance got commissioned because they were just desperate for writers to an extent, which is a real shame. It's a real shame because definitely one of the best writers of this period.
I remember watching the documentary and they said like there was going to be a third Snakes serial written by him, and then he just started writing it and just couldn't really get anywhere with it. And he was just like, this is all I got. And they're like, oh, then we're just going to scrap it because like I don't think he wrote a whole lot. And he's like, I don't want to write for television anymore, or like specifically like stuff like this.
Theater writer, isn't he? Or was?
Mm-hmm. It's a shame because he's very good. So Tony, what are your final thoughts?
I think it was like once we had finished the first episode when we were watching it, that like we both were like, finally a good fucking serial. Like, been kind of a little bit of a slog for the past couple of serials.
Especially since the last two were kind of really bad.
Yeah. The last two specifically. But, oh, this one's so good. A lot of times there's like, if an episode of Doctor Who isn't great, I do have a tendency to be like, yeah, but like, I really liked this. I have a tendency to like look at the design, you know, and be like, but I really liked that one prop. Like, there's a lot of cool thought that went into that. Or I really liked, you know, some of the set pieces. Everything about this one was good. Like, I haven't stopped talking about, you know, the design that went into this one because I really like it. It all goes to, like, serve the world building, which, you know, was amazing. Everything about this feels like it takes place in a real place. All of the characters feel like real people. I think that was, like, a lot of the time, the problems we had with, like, the past two serials is, like, there's a lot of people who exist to serve the plot, and the plot's not great. So I don't care. This character exists, but just barely. That is not a problem that this has at all. Everything feels, you know, very real and very lived in. And like, I think the one thing that like we haven't really talked about, well, we talked about it a little bit, but I just want to talk about it some more because it's true, is just how great Tegan's acting is. She's so great as the Mara. And like actually giving her like that little bit of time to like be traumatized and like address like how hard that was for her. It's a shame that like we haven't yet reached that kind of serialization where they would like actually delve into that and deal with the consequences of that. But actually having that moment, I think, is something new, at least, you know, as insofar as the show goes. And I think that is very interesting, yeah, to end on it, you know, to kind of be like, whoa, that sucks, and I feel bad about it. And not, like, you know, ending on this, like, cheery note of, like, we saved the day and defeated the bad guy. Let's go on to our next adventure. So it's not, like, quite where I'd like it to be in that, like, you know, today where, like, it is weird that, like, they don't super discuss it after that. But even just having that moment is new. And it's a super cool thing to watch. And I don't know. The serial's great. I love it. It looks good. It's interesting. It plays with interesting ideas. Yeah, I don't have anything more to say. It's excellent.
Vince?
I feel like most of what I was going to say has been covered by previous comments. Because I agree. I think it's a very good serial. I think I had a really good time with it. I thought there were some good bits in it. And I thought there was some great production design. The, you know, puppets and costumes and sets and all that stuff was all very, very nice to look at. Some good use of colors and lighting and all that stuff. And I thought the story was engaging. And the characters were, you know, fun. I don't really know this doctor or the companions that well, having basically seen nothing of them, but I enjoyed them in this story, and I thought it was good serial. I feel like I have very little to add after everything that's already been said.
Now it's my turn, and I have even
yeah, it's hard going last.
It is hard going last. Yeah, I completely agree with everything. I mean, I will say, like, having seen the rest of the stuff that you haven't seen up to this point, there isn't a whole lot of characterization going on, I feel like. And like specifically, I feel like Kinda and this one have a lot of stuff for Tegan where she doesn't have much other than that, other than like, I want to go back to Heathrow Airport or whatever. This has been my favorite Fifth Doctor serial so far since Kinda. So yeah, these two serials I think are like the top so far. I feel like Kinda was a little bit better in regards to being trippier, sort of more weird and out there, a little more bizarre. But I feel like Snake Dance is sort of took all that and sort of made it more, a little less incomprehensible. Like, I think Kinda is a good serial and stuff, but it is also a little hard to figure out Sometimes it's a little more dense, but like Snake Dance sort of takes it and makes it a lot more fun and interesting and sort of explains things a little bit better. And I kind of like enjoy that a little bit more. It's just, it's more fun to just sit and watch. It maybe isn't as deep or trying to be like certain things, but I still think it does a lot. Maybe just a little clearer. And I think that's actually a really good thing. I liked Kenda, but I think I liked Snake Dance a lot better. Like you said, the characters are all great. They're all really rounded and fully developed. And just the world building, just all of the festival and the ceremonies. And like, there is sort of a lot of kind of exposition, but like, I think it's all very interesting exposition. It's like, it's not boring and it's not like you're just like, oh, I don't care about this. It's generally done in a way that it doesn't feel like people are just telling you things. It comes kind of naturally. Like, there's a lot of it being, you know, like coming from Ambril describing it to another character because that's like his job, sort of, is he knows all of these history facts and they're playing it off through comedy because he's like saying all this exposition and it's kind of boring. And like, there's a character reacting to that. And like, that helps smooth it along a little bit. And I always enjoy that more than just like characters talking. And like, some of it is like sort of given to you through like the ceremonies and the parade and all that. And like, there's a, when they have the snake going through the streets, there's a guy yelling stuff through a megaphone that's giving you a history of everything. So like, I feel like all of it is like nicely integrated. It doesn't feel like just, oh, we got to tell you stuff. So yeah, I love this serial a whole lot. And it's like, yeah, specifically after coming after Time Flight and to a lesser extent, Arc of Infinity. I liked Arc of Infinity okay, but like, they're definitely not the strongest serials. It was a nice relief to get something that's not only good, but like really good. So yeah, I'm a fan. I hope this season keeps it up. Maybe it will. Maybe it won't. We'll see. So that's it. Before we go, is there anything you guys would like to plug? Vince, is there anything you want to plug?
I have music on vincentdl.bandcamp.com. I have a YouTube channel, youtube.com/swenglish, where sometimes I put things. Got a song called Perfectly on there that people should probably listen to. Also, fuck the fire department.
It's going viral.
A little bit. Yeah, I've got stuff like that. I don't know what else to say. Support Black Lives Matter and also trans rights.
Nice. Adam, what do you got?
Well, first of all, I'd like to promote not having your mute button on when you start to speak. yeah. I have a podcast at the moment called The Real McCoy Podcast, which I do with Eric Stadnick, which is an in-depth look at the Sylvester McCoy era, which is my favourite era of Doctor Who. You can find us on iTunes, or you can follow us on Twitter at @real_pod. Our next episode to record is Curse of Fenric, which should be soon. That's my basic project, other project at the moment. So yeah, listen to it and hear me talk about Sylvester McCoy lovingly.
Sounds good. Tony?
Keep watching Unseen World, please. I think the new episodes are going to start coming out in September.
Nice.
So keep an eye out for that.
Well, and you can see those at watchheartlandtv.com.
I don't do anything else. That's it.
I might be in a film festival, Etowah Film Festival, which is going to be
happening.
It's going to be a virtual film festival, so keep an eye out for that. I'll drop links and stuff when it gets closer. I'm not sure when they're doing it yet. But my two clones will be playing there. In the meantime, you can buy Road Trippy by J.B. Hivemind, which I wrote with Ray Friesen and Chris Cherry.
It's Hivemind.
Yes, I'm sorry. It's pronounced Hivemind. You can buy that on Amazon. J.B. Hivemind has also written another book, but that was me, Ray Friesen, and Vincent E.L.
Hi.
That book is called The Princess and the Pterodactyls. So check out those books.
It's a very silly book.
Road Trippy is also silly, but I don't think it's as silly.
It's not the same kind of silly. It's a different kind of silly.
Yeah. If you like this episode of the podcast, you can check out more on watchyourrassilon.com. While you're there, if you'd like to help us out, you can go to our support page, where you'll find a link to our Patreon page, where you can get all kinds of rewards. And there's also a link to our Amazon wish list, where you can sponsor an episode of the podcast by purchasing a DVD or Blu-ray for us. And we'll mention you on the podcast and put your name on our Friends of Rassilon page. Speaking of, special thanks again to Matt Golden for sponsoring this episode.
Hey, thanks, Matt.
Golden!
Check him out at matthewgolden.net. And also, special thanks to Vince and EL for giving us our theme song.
Thanks, Vince.
You're welcome.
Vince already said where you can find them, but vinceandel.bandcamp.com. And tune in next time when we talk about Modron Undead with our returning Robert Holmes duo, Chris Cherry and Felicity Cousinants.
Oh, that'll be a good one.
And that's not a weird pronunciation of a modern?
That is the exact same thing I said. I thought the first time Joe said it, I thought he was doing like a Mabimbam bit.
Yeah, no, it's Modron. It's M-A-W-D-R-Y-N. Modron Undead. It's not a reference to my brother and me.
I thought it might be a southern thing.
But that's it. Until next time, keep calm and wrestle on.
Wrestle lawn?
Yes, wrestle lawn.
Goodbye and I love you in a platonic parasocial way.
Bye.
Have a tasteful tuna.
Consider that snake danced.
Look at me. Look at me.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network. Be part of the crew and help support our shows by donating to our ESO Patreon or by shopping through Amazon.com or the TeePublic store, which can all be found at www.esonetwork.com. The ESO Network, your station for all things geek.